Today on Voices for Change, we're going to be talking to Jack about his experiences with Umonde Trust, as well as kind of some issues about policy and governments. So we're going to go ahead and get started. Jenny, would you like to ask the first question?
Sure. So Jack, we would love if you could introduce yourself and talk about your role at Umonde Trust and how did you get started with the organization?
Okay. As I said earlier, my name is Jack Oduo. I work at Umonde Trust as governance and networking and policy officer. I joined Umonde Trust at its onset. That is around 2005, 2006. I started as a community organizer. But right now, I rose through the ranks to become the governance, networking, and policy officer. Basically, my work involves networking with like-minded organizations in the sector and outside in the Washington sector. Number two, on governance, as a governance, as the one in charge of governance, try to look at address discrepancies or governance issues within the WASH sector, and then thirdly is to look at the policies which can be able to help streamline the operations within the WASH sector.
Great. So can you talk a little bit about the increase in inequalities that have occurred due to corruption in the WASH services systems?
The inequalities within the WASH sector. This is this bring about the high cost of WASH services. It also promotes the inadequate WASH services to the vulnerables. And then there's also about the quality of WASH services gets compromised. So there's an issue of there's an issue of cost, there's an issue of quality, there's an issue of affordability, and there's an issue of accessibility. Yes.
So to follow up, there's people take advantage of vulnerable communities, as you know. So what does it look like to have good governance in place for WASH services?
There's good governance within the WASH sector, then trust me, the vulnerables will have the aspect of the accessibility, affordability, availability, and will all be addressed in good governance, because the vulnerable will be able to access all these services, afford, and then the services will be available, yes, with good governance in place.
Yeah, I think that's really important. What policies does Umonde have in terms of WASH? Like, are there any ones that Umonde has worked on or works to in between about WASH services and policy?
Actually, Umonde as an organization does not have WASH policies. Because even if you have WASH policies as an organization, it will not change anything, because the responsibility of service provision lies with the duty bearer, which is the government. So it's upon the government to have the policies. The only thing that Umonde is promoting is the HRBA approach, human rights-based approach. Yes, the woman is just promoting the HRBN approach, but also working closely with the government to ensure that the policies that they are putting in place embrace the HRBA process.
Yeah, that definitely, I can see how that's true. Do you think that Umande has to work within policies set by the government, or like how does Umande interact with the policy sector?
Okay, what we do, some of the work we do influence the government policy, because we know that the policy keeps on changing, and keeps on changing. If you look at the policies that we had before the MDGs are now obsolete. Now the government tried very much to realign their policies, and now in Kenya, after the 2010 constitution, we had to add new policies because human rights issues were really centered into our constitution. So you feel that since we actually advanced human rights to water and sanitation services, so our work and our plans and our budget influence the government's policy direction.
So the next question that we wanted to ask you is, how does policy influence practice? I know you kind of touched on this a bit in your last questions, but could you elaborate more on how policy influence practice?
How policy influence practice, yes. Number one, policy will come up with the two critical things. Number one, budgetary framework. Number two is about the implementation framework. So a good policy which has a budgetary allocation, because you can have executed, actually will influence the practice. But if we have a policy which is not well funded, because actually the policy talks about how do we operationalize this, and with what resources. Yes.
Great. What do you think the future of policy looks like in terms of WASH policies? Are there any policies that you'd like to see come to life, or ones that you wish were in place?
I have three policies that I can be able to talk about. We have
that sounds great.
We have a biogas policy. Umande, if you look at Umande's sanitation options, they talk about how the recycling use that putting into use of the human waste by turning them into biogas. But if you look at the current government biogas policy, it talks about animal waste as a source of biogas. So that one limits that would really limit the usage and the promotion of the human waste as a source of biogas. So we are trying to work closely with the government to ensure that we change that policy so that the human waste aspect is incorporated into that policy, so that the adoption rate can be higher. Number two, right now I'm even in Naivasha looking at we are planning to look at the government's sanitation policy. Currently, we don't have a strong sanitation policy. And that is what is making the government to actually address sanitation policy, the sanitation issue, without any proper framework, no serious funding. So if you put in place a strong sanitation policy, which this means that the human waste disposal, industrial waste, all those kind of waste will actually be properly addressed and properly budgeted for by the government. Lastly, we have the menstrual hygiene policy. The menstrual hygiene policy is very close to us. But to Male, as a sanitation organization, we look at it from two angles. Number one, access to sanitary pads by our vulnerable girls. But another aspect is about the disposal. You find that the disposal will now become a challenge. We'll have, if you look at the urban sanitation challenges, the menstrual, the sanitary pads are regarded as part of the open defecation. So, to us, we're also looking at the access and then the disposal. That's how we are. And then the last thing that you cannot be able to run away from is the water policy, which is looking at the aspect of protection of our water, from the protection of our water sources, right to the last point where the human consumption and the industrial use of water, and then lastly is the discharge of the industrial water waste. Yes, thank you.
Yes, so I can tell based off of your responses how passionate and how much knowledge you have on this topic. So I would love to know why you're so passionate about policy and why you're so passionate about policy being the driving force behind change.
You know, the policy is the direction. So if you want to go, if you are in Kenya and you want to go to the US, you must take the right direction. Otherwise, you will go, if you take a longer route or if you don't use the right direction, it will be cumbersome and expensive. But if you take the right direction, it will be less costly and shorter. So if you have the right policy in place, then the policy is the driving engine for the it is actually the engine for the successful implementation of the government agenda. Yes, in an organized manner.
Yes, I completely agree with you.
I think those are some really great points as well. I was wondering if you had any last thoughts kind of on things you wanted to add or anything that you didn't get to say before about your experiences with WASH or anything related to that and policy.
I think one of the things that we talk about WASH every now and again, WASH every now and again. Maybe like now the challenge we have with the coronavirus pandemic, people we didn't know that there's a hygiene component on it. If you have good hygiene practice, the washing of hands is a culture within us. Then even the rate of the even the will have spent less in fighting the virus, especially for the vulnerable. But we find that, but most of the time, we find that that the awareness creation on this has been very minimal. But secondly, even if it is there, but the water for hand washing is not there, because there's always that scarcity of water. So people look at it that people see hand washing as an expensive luxury. It's like telling a struggling Kenyan to take a vacation to Dubai. Are you getting what I'm trying to say? Because if you buy water for a 20 liter jerrycan for 20 shillings, and then you want to wash your hands 10 times in a day, and maybe it's a family of seven, so they want to wash their hands 70 times in a day, they will require maybe an entire 20 liters for hand washing. Is that really sustainable? No. So what we need is to invest more on wash. If we invest more on wash, some of these challenges, some of these diseases that we have, we may not be able to eradicate, but we may be able to reduce them maybe even by half. Like now, if you look at in the COVID-19 situation, the amount of money which has been spent to put up public hand washing in stations, soap, and then it has been a lot. But are they sustainable? No, because it's a rush process. So we need a serious engagement, serious investment, on awareness creation on the WASH agenda.
Thank you, Jack, for being here with us. That was our last question for today's podcast. Dana, is there any last questions you may have in mind for Jack before I wrap up?
No, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being here and for talking with us. We really appreciate your perspective on policy and thoughts on how it influences WASH. And also thank you for all of the work that you do at Amandi Trust. It's such important work, and it's so great to get to hear all about it.